be honest, any achievement at this point is always a good one. Like you said, durability is something I take a lot of pride in. I don't know how many games, you know, I don't like missing games, but being at this stage, obviously, of the career and being able to be out here starting, I don't know what I look like. I know in the stat sheet I don't put a lot up, but, you know, energetically wise, I'm giving what I have. Like, to think that I can stay a guard, that says a lot. I know y'all think I just wake up like this, but I actually put a lot of work into myself. You know, my mom and dad, geez, ain't that great.
Hello and welcome to the latest Wolves Wire podcast, part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network Podcast Center. Follow the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network at HPB Network. This is sort of a different podcast we got going today. We have our guest, Dave. Superstats Dave is his alias. Dave, what is your last name?
Last name is Handeland.
Timmy is here as well. Tim Fakeless is his name. Fink as well.
He's not on the podcast.
Notable roommate, sometimes stats guy, but we have our real stats guy, Dave, here today. Dave, the main reason we brought you here today, Dave is somehow affiliated with the Timberwolves. He tracks stats during the games and does other various things like record audio or capture or what am I saying?
I don't know what you're saying.
Gather, like a reporter would, audio of players in the locker room, as I found out. Dave, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Dave Handel, and I do statistics for Alan Horton and on WCCO radio.
So you
do? Yeah, I do all the home games for Timberwolves and then also for the Lynx as well. So I'm right next to Alan on the broadcast, kind of writing everything down as it's going along and passing him post-it notes to try to add.
That he will project, on the radio.
Project yep. onto the radio.
So all of his stats, I mean, he has his monitor with the stats that
correct.
Tim
yeah,
and
he's
I
got
see.
He's got the box score that everybody else does. It's,
sure,
it's a matter.
But
of
then he
what
has,
I'm doing. I'm breaking down. I'm writing everything by hand. What's going on
during the game?
During the game,
by yourself,
by myself.
So he has he tweets a lot of interesting stats too. Is that you a lot of the time?
He's pretty good at getting his
Is
own stuff.
Too?
He's pretty
good. A lot of it's in the media guides, too.
Sure. A lot of it's in media guides. Like, his, like, if you've never been out there before, you should see his, like, pregame sheet. He's got it color-coded, highlighted out of his own notes for each team.
In what section?
Up in our...
Because you're in the booth in the
we're
section.
We're above, like, it's like above section 132, I believe, is where
sounds
we're at.
Right.
Yep,
it sounds
132,
right.
We're right over, to this like, Sun Country, I believe. Over that,
and he's got it all. He's got it all.
He's got it all up in his notes. But and yeah, he tweets out a lot of stuff. Some of the stuff is on his own. Some of it is just conversations that we're having, or he'll have a thought in his head of something he wants, and then look it up. And
you're like a hit. You're like a hit of a stimulant, though, because you have stats that
yes.
aren't on the screen.
I've got stats that aren't on the screen. Like some things are on there, but it's the they've missed 7 out of the last 8 shots, or breaking down things by time, or.
And how long?
Ricky's been part of 10 of the last 12 Minnesota points.
Sure,
like that kind of
yeah. The good stuff.
The good stuff.
That's why I'm sticking with the PG-13 comparison.
Yes.
In the shot of a stimulant. How long have you been doing this?
I've been in with the Wolves for 11 years. I came in the year it all went
south.
I
The Western Conference Finals year? Was that your first year?
No, I was the year after.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's unfortunate. So, unfortunate time.
I'm kind of the black sheep of the whole thing. Where
did you grow up in Minnesota?
Grew up in Minnesota. Yep. Grew up in Minnesota, southern Minnesota, Austin. Spamtown, USA is what people know.
Yep. Great youth baseball programs.
Great youth baseball programs.
I can't make it up. They were good every year in the youth tournament.
I like they also host like softball state tournaments.
Can you attest to Austin's? No?
Never played Austin.
Never played? Okay.
Frank never played Austin.
No. Okay, where was I?
So, 11 years I've done that. I've been, first 2 years were kind of.
Yeah, how did you get into it?
More part time. I graduated from college, didn't know what the heck I wanted to do.
Did you study statistics?
I didn't study statistics. Oh, wow. I did some math, and yeah, I liked sports. I was a sports nerd who had a
business
degree.
You grew up a Wolves fan.
I grew up a Wolves fan.
Okay.
Wolves used to have a summer league.
They used to have
it here. And it was hosted here. And that was right as I graduated from college. So it was like for a week here, there was like six teams. First, 2 days, I went there strictly as basketball fan. Just get there in the morning, watch the games throughout the day, go home. Tuesday night, I think it dawned on me, wait a second, I've got a college degree and I don't have a job and I love sports. There's a bunch of people hanging around here. So Wednesday, I went back there and I just kind of, all right, who looks like they're in power here? Who looks like they've got positioning of some sort that I could network with.
Mm-hmm.
So then finally...
you were doing the dirty.
I was doing the dirty. So then I came back Thursday.
It's not, listen to him.
Came back Thursday,
this is
Friday.
Persistence, right?
I just like your phrasing. Doing the dirty.
So I came back Thursday and Friday and met people and got my way in. Met one of...
I guess...
It was Mike Cristaldi. I eventually got the name Mike Cristaldi and Matt Sleeter and... They were with PR at the time, and I kind of just got passed for them. It was a very odd way to go in. A lot of the guys who do what I do, they all kind of had University of Minnesota backgrounds, and it's a very tight-knit community where, hey, we need somebody.
Clicky.
Do you know anybody?
Yeah,
and they,
clicky.
And kind of one gets brought in, where I was a complete
outsider. Back it up here, because I'm really befuddled, and I think there's a reason for that. This is 2004-05, you would have been doing this? So I wasn't living here at the time, and you guys spoke of a summer league, a Wolf summer league. What is this?
It was the summer league. The one in Vegas, they used to have a form of it in Minnesota.
Yeah, so they had the small, even Orlando one or Utah ones. It was one of those.
Multiple teams.
Six to eight teams here,
yeah,
I think.
Right? When Rashad McCants was a rookie, when Randy Foy, Craig Smith were rookies, Corey Brewer may have been the last year, his rookie year. But it used to be here. The best in-game dunk I've ever seen in the Target Center was during one of those summer league games. It was Nate Robinson, his rookie year. It was a tip dunk. It was crazy. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
But it was great.
I don't know if I remember that one. That was
he and David Lee would have.
He could probably Dave could probably tell you who got the assist on it though, from what it sounds like.
I remember the first year. I think it was Matt Bonner. I think so. I don't know why it stuck out that Matt Bonner was there, but I remember saying something to him.
Other teams came.
Other teams
played
came.
The Wolves. Okay.
I remember New York.
Other teams. Yeah, they didn't just play the Wolves.
Seattle,
they played. Toronto for sure.
Toronto was there.
It just confused me because recently we've been having these dunks after dark and then the the scrimmages. So I wasn't sure. Maybe it was
just some legit selling tickets and a couple thousand people there during the day. And
I think the Orlando one was
and this
going then. And then there was Minnesota and there was one other, maybe in the Southwestern.
Utah has one, right?
I think those three just split it up between the 30 teams.
Vegas was a good call for the league, I think, definitely.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's an event down there. They sell it out. But sorry to interrupt you. So you're at one of these summer league events in Minnesota, and you're just diligently going around, shaking hands, kissing babies.
Shaking hands Thursday or Friday, shaking hands and trying to meet people. And
I like how you broke it down by the week. Wednesday.
I showed up. That second one, it just clicks. Wait a second. I could actually... Try to do this as a full-time job type of thing? This would be a great full-time job.
How many days did it take you to get the interview?
Interview-wise, it was all pretty relaxed on that. Where once I got the name, it was just a kind of a conversation. Have you ever done stats before? Have you done anything like that? And basically, my stat work officially before that was being the... I rolled the bench in my ninth grade basketball team and kept a book.
Oh, man.
So that was basically it. And I don't know. I like to think I was good at keeping book, and it less prevented me from playing time once people got injured, and our coach just figured keep me at the books to make sure it was right. I'm going to use that as the reason why I didn't get more of a basketball future after that.
You contributed to the team, though.
And I contributed
in a way
team.
You're still contributing to the team. Where did you go to high school?
Austin, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We said the city of Austin. I guess I didn't go right to high school.
There are two high schools there, so it could have been a confusing. That's probably where you got confused.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what it was.
So you diligently went to Summer League Minneapolis. I assume it wasn't as popular as Vegas is, but and how many, you know, you got, once you got the job, you've been doing it for 11 years. What does, you know, once you got into a routine, how long would you say you've been doing the same thing every time you go to work? Because you did it during the Lynx season.
Yep, I would say this is year number 10 that I've been the full-time, like, home radio stats guy.
So
first year, like, as I met people, or first year I was randomly scheduled, I was kind of with the Wolves Spanish radio. Huh. That was, like, one of the first years of it, so...
And that was a cool experience, I hope.
Because I speak zero Spanish.
Nice!
I'm doing the same thing I did, and I could pass the note, but I didn't understand, really words that he was saying. Like, unless I saw, like, I knew numbers, so I knew numbers if he would say them or, like, hearing names.
And I'm sure
for 2.5 hours we're sitting courtside, I have not a clue
what
he was saying, but...
Did you pick up any Spanish on the way, or no?
Not really.
No?
Not really.
So did you...
It was happening so quick, and I'm writing stuff down. Like, even during games, like, it's tough to enjoy games a whole lot, because it's when constantly pen writing down, and depending on the pace of play, and if there's turnovers or made shots, if looking down, like, sometimes I'll have to depend on Alan for hoping sure that he says the right thing, because I'm going to go over and write it. Right. Like, I'll get some stuff from the box score.
What's the timeline on broadcasters you've had? Did you work with Chad Hartman? I know he used to do.
So I did. Yep, I was with Hartman, and then Brian Seaman came in.
I remember him.
He was with the Wolves for, I think it was 2 years. What he was, he did Lynx. He did that with Billy McKinney, who was kind of the crossover from Chad.
Okay.
Chad to Brian. Billy, I believe, was in the first year with Alan. Then Kevin Lynch came in. We had Lynch for a year or two. And then Alan's been... Why do I think I'm forgetting somebody? But I don't think I am. Alan's been solo for 4 to 5 years here.
I was going to say, it didn't even pop in. I mean, as far as long as I
think we had Lynch for 2 years, I think is what it was.
Did you work with Folky during the Lynx season this year?
So worked with Folky for the first time during Lynx playoff season this year.
He started doing the Lynx games.
Yep, he started doing
like Alan used to do.
Yep, where Folky, like, I think the previous 2 years, maybe?
He's
for
the,
Lynx,
he's
he,
like
he did the road games. He did the road
games. Oh,
Alan did the home games, and John did the road games. This year, John took over as the full-time voice
of the Lynx.
Of the Lynx.
And did a pretty good job.
Did a pretty good job.
On the,
he got him a championship.
he led him the way, the entire way. That WNBA Live Access does, they simulcast the radio.
Okay.
So I got to listen to a lot of Folky. He ain't bad himself.
No, he's good, and he's filled in a couple times for Alan throughout the years. Like,
has he?
Alan was sick once or twice, and all of a sudden John was up there.
That surprises me. I just picture him as a superhuman who is following the Wolves around at all times.
He's mortal.
What I wanted to get into, certainly, is at Dunks After Dark last year, I was sitting next to what seemed to be the team stat guys, or some of the analytics guys, and they had like 4 or 5 of them shouting simultaneous. You know, who would get the assist and rebound and things like that. Is that sort of what you do by yourself? Do you know who they are?
Yep,
and
I do know what they are.
Yep. About? Who are they?
One of the guys is Jeff Kaiser. He used to do my current role. He was with Chad Hartman for years and years and years. And so, yeah, they're the official stat guys. So there's one guy, I think the rules are the caller. So the one person is constantly saying everything that's going on. And it's which officials calling things. What's the distance
Levine,
of a shot?
Levine pass or
Levine assist to Gorgie 2-foot jump hook put in there.
So he's basically doing Allen's job.
Yep, he's doing the all call. He's calling everything that's going on. The other person is inputting and then on his computer, just punching it all in. Kind of, I think they've got it. The new system now is kind of a touch screen that they can do.
Really?
Then they also have a secondary person working with them. So if there is a mistake or they need to go correction, he's writing it down. He's going back in and correcting after the play. Like going
fact,
back
yeah,
it
up. Fact. That makes sense.
Because
how many of them are there?
There's three of them who do that. They're the official stats, and they get like, for me, if I screw up, there's some little kid someplace who maybe is going to call me out on it. Like
an
adult.
Has that ever happened?
There's been little things, but nothing ever major. But like if they're graded on by the NBA.
Really?
Like, yep. So they have to go through the rule book on that and every new rule and try to figure out things. They're a lot more. There's more of an eye looking out at what they do, because that goes to the NBA and they get graded out.
Forces them to be accountable. That's why.
Like some of the other spots down there, it's none of the guys who do this kind of job do it for the pay. They do it they love the game of basketball and they enjoy it, and you get great access to something that if you're a fan, you get great access for it. Like the
sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It sounds like kind of what
you're doing. For the pay. I don't know what you're
for the pay?
Yeah.
I do it for the exposure.
You do it for the exposure. Like the game clock guys and the scoreboard operators, like their payoff is during the postseason, the NBA doesn't want the scoreboard operator at Cleveland to be Cleveland's own guys.
Really?
So they get that group gets shipped around during the playoffs. So
wow.
Like the Timberwolves shot clock guy, if his numbers
they're graded throughout the season and then like playoff
the season
teams,
and they get playoff assignments. So they'll get sent to Phoenix. They'll get sent to Phoenix for the first round of the playoffs and
a neutral.
Yep, a neutral site.
Sure.
Interesting.
That's cool. I mean, because obviously, from what it sounds like here, anyway. The entire inner workings of what you do, and you know, I'm sure other building employees, you know, people are just there because basketball is what they like. That's why we're doing this damn podcast. And so you wouldn't want people in the playoffs to be impartial, like the shot clock.
Yeah, the last thing the NBA would want is something like that. Cheating it, where like, well, the shot clock operator's got a quick trigger.
Well,
like,
what happened in, and we'll just start going into the recap. The official part of this podcast, I guess, between last Sunday and this Sunday, when Tim and I last spoke to the audience, the Wolves were 4-2.
Correct.
No, they were 3-2.
Three and two. Yep, yep.
And the day after they went to Atlanta, and it was they almost blew the big 34-point lead in the first half. Atlanta came back, made a game of it. Wolves closed it out. It was the last game Ricky Rubio played. Am I correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Wasn't it actually 34 even? Didn't get up to 34
that
game?
30, I think, was the
30? I thought I said 34, if I'm wrong.
34.
34?
It was a huge
comeback. That a boy, Fink. He's clutch. Fink threw that up. He's like, God damn it.
Fink's our you
Fink's
for this podcast.
You?
Fink is our super stats Dave.
He's a stat boy from BTI.
But thank you, Fink. After that, they came home for a two-game set, the Charlotte Hornets, Golden State Warriors. I think the theme of every game, with the exception of the Grizzlies game Sunday, tonight, which we'll get into in a minute, was that regardless of the outcome, the Wolves played hard. Whether they were ahead or behind, the game always seemed to be a game of it in the end, and they've lost some close games here, and you can attribute that to Ricky Rubio being out. But have we learned anything about the way LaVine is playing? He seems to be playing better. Wiggins is pretty unbelievable right now, in my opinion. He's aggressive. He's asserting himself. He was efficient as hell tonight. Tonight's game with the Memphis Grizzlies was, as we've joked about, gentlemen, boring but competitive. It was old school and physical, and you know, between both the teams, 33 three-pointers shot. For over 200 points scored, so shows
didn't
you
feel like that. I mean,
because both teams made 50% of their shots
for 220 points being scored in an NBA game. It was a really boring,
really
Memphis.
I think we agree, right?
It was a Memphis game with extra points.
Funny story, before the game, Sam Mitchell has not, how do I put this politely? Sam Mitchell could have more sophisticated answers when he does media availability. It's like, the comparison I'll make is he's like a child who's been told to go outside and rake the leaves. He doesn't want to go rake the leaves, but he's got to go do it, and there's no getting around it. If you don't rake the leaves are still there. So, before the game, he's taking questions and not helping us with answers. I know we asked if Rubio was going to be available, and he said no. And then Kent Youngblood later was peeking for details, you know, doing his job as a reporter, and Sam's like, I'm not going to talk about it. And in a way, the collective media is almost, you know, trying to get something out of him. I mean, the perception with Rubio in this town is that he's injury prone. He can never stay healthy, and it's not, with him going with three games he's missed, he's been probable, questionable. He's missed them all, so it's a bad perception. But
four games, I think, isn't it?
Four. Yeah, the fourth. Yeah. Anyway, what this all comes back to, I asked Sam Mitchell if coaching, I prefaced it by, it's been a while since he's been in the coach. I think 08, 09 was his last
head
season.
Coach.
Head coach specifically. And I used the cliche term, is coaching like riding a bike? I figure a general amount of people would know what that question means with my experience with Flip and Cheryl Reeve. I mean, you get the general point of it, and he's, I don't know. Tim, you heard the audio. He answered, and then I followed up with, well, how do you assess yourself? And then
this is my favorite part.
He goes, I don't really look at it that way. Something, something, something. Do you assess everything you write after you're done writing it? And before I can answer,
Of course we do.
He continued to talk, and you know, the way I'll put this is when everybody went to go talk to Dave Yorger, granted it's a little bit of a homecoming for him. You know, Jerry Zagota usually gets a hug from Yorger, and Zagota wasn't there today. So Yorger's hug went to Marnie Gelmer. It's just an indication of the rapport that he has with him, and it's just such a difference between it. And I mean, you were there post-game, and you heard Sam Mitchell.
Yeah.
If he didn't have to talk to media, he wouldn't do it.
Right. It's part of his gig as being a head coach. He doesn't make it fun. No, he's very, I don't want to get in trouble either, defensive. He gives defensive answers. He doesn't want to get...
I think the gig is up, and anybody who's made it this far understands the type of
A lot of
response.
Press conferences end with at least one answer where he describes how a certain type of question that we're always asking
Well, Britt Robeson wrote about it, and it was an interaction Sam had with a media member after the Hornets game.
Yes. First game Rubio missed, which Wiggins also missed.
Yes, and we thought everybody was going to be healthy for the Golden State game, and that's just completely incorrect. But he asked a softball about Adrian Payne playing well, and it just hasn't gone well. But to his defense, he's still the interim coach. He doesn't have any security beyond this season, at least to my knowledge. He certainly isn't going to be guaranteed to be the head coach next season. He has... As we've seen this past week, his team plays hard. I mean, they're in games at the end despite losing them, and that's something we haven't seen with the Timberwolves in years. I mean, Adelman's love team when they went 40-42 would get close and blow it. But these guys, they're in it. I think they're playing hard. Rubio's health concerns me.
Yeah, I mean, overall,
this team grinds away, and like. That Atlanta game last Monday, like that was a team that was up 34 points, blew the lead, and that was all in the second half.
Yeah, the Wolves blew it.
The Wolves blew the lead, and all of a sudden, for everything bad that's happened, they're down at Atlanta by 1 point in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes to go after you've mentally had to go through the whole... Just blown a 34-point lead on the road at Atlanta, who's 4-1 or Atlanta's record. They're really 4-1 at the time.
Who's their organist? Do you know his name? The guy who plays organ. He's going crazy playing jams during his comeback. It was ruckus atmosphere.
Yeah, that Atlanta crowd was into it, and that, like, everything that had led into that, that was a Wolves team that was down one with 3 minutes to go against a great Atlanta team who's going to be probably the 1 or 2 seed in the East, and Wolves still found a way to win it. Like, they grinded away at it.
Yeah, there's no question that they're a good team when they're healthy, but they're not healthy right now. And you wonder how many these minutes that the old guys are accumulating, you wonder how long they're going to be able to do it and contribute.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, with the exception of tonight, I don't think there's any question whether, no matter what you think of Mitchell, the defense is so much better than it was last year.
Yeah, with the exception of tonight.
I think the Grizzlies shot 56%. The Wolves shot something around 50%. It was an offensive game, which is weird considering the two teams, but defensively it's night and day from last year.
And we saw that actually during when NBA TV did like the real training camp.
Yeah,
And the announcers were blown away at, they haven't even got a ball out yet, or they're doing strictly defensive positioning and defensive stances. And like, that was what Mitchell completely harped on the team that day, was defense, 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 which is, for what we've seen around here, it was a change of pace, and
it's a good place to hang their hat.
Yeah,
for sure. Andy at Punch Drunk Wolves did point out, you know, they are doing sort of the old school defending straight up, where, like, you know, most teams in the NBA now will, when there's a side screen and roll, they make sure the ball handler goes to the baseline, whereas, like, the Wolves are just content to follow them whichever way around the screen. Zach LaVine would be, I mean, aside from Wiggins, who's been playing great lately, I don't have an accumulated amount of statistics over the past however many games, but he's been good. He's been aggressive. He's trying to dunk on people. I think we've abolished the passive label, or I think he officially has. We don't even need to address that anymore. And then LaVine playing point guard. Tonight, he had 25 points, 3 assists. He had 5 fouls, and he was in foul trouble for most of the game. It didn't feel like he was in a rhythm. He shot the ball like crazy.
He had 13 points in the final 3 minutes.
Yeah, right in his garbage time start. I don't want to take away from 25.
Whoa! The shots were going in. He was hitting some tough shots, but the Wolves, the game never got out of hand at the end, but it never got really close. But LaVine was scoring every time down the court at the end. And granted, to Memphis's credit, they were making free throws coming back. But Zach kept pouring points, and if the game would have got up to 15, Mitchell's going to pull him out of there, throw in Tyus, and call it a day. But Zach kept scoring and kept kind of running through him. And it was working, but his stat line tonight.
He played 18 minutes, and he led the team in scoring. That's weird. And we saw him do things. The Golden State game was ugly, atrocious at times. But he's dunking in the lane against Charlotte, you know, hesitation moves in the lane, dunking over people. He came out in the second half today and hit a couple big shots and then picked up the fourth foul and had to sit down right away. Anything?
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't want to take away from 25 points, but A, it was the quietest 25 points in that small amount of time.
Yeah, I just looked at it and was like,
B, oh my God. Before the game got out of hand, or before Jeff Green, I think it was, hit this dagger that put them up 8 with like a minute and a half to go, LaVine took 2 3-pointers when the game was still within reach
in that balance.
Were super ill-advised. I don't know if it was drawn up for him or if the coach was mad or what that was, but despite his numbers, I wasn't totally happy with how he played.
Well, now that you've said that, could you connect the dots? In the post-game presser, Sam Mitchell, he stressed, you know, there's a place and a time to do certain things. And he didn't mention anybody by name, but now that you've pointed that out,
I think it was LaVine.
It sounds like it was LaVine. And there was a point in the game, too, where LaVine and Towns had to switch on defense. LaVine ended up on Marc Gasol and...
Mm-hmm.
Like
near the end of the game,
he ran away from a free throw jumper.
And
I understand LaVine doesn't need to be matched up against Pau Gasol, so he's probably looking for a switch. but he ran away and Pau Gasol was just left there and just nailed a 15-foot jumper. That was pretty significant point in the game. So you wonder if these type of mistakes, because Towns knew who screwed up.
Yeah.
Towns might be new in town, but
he knows
he's got some swing and he knows how to play, and he's probably annoyed when his teammates screw up like that. He's trying to win. I think he's lost more this season than he ever did, ever, in high school and at Kentucky.
He probably has more combined losses, or more losses this season than he does combined between high school and college.
And if not now, he will eventually.
Yeah.
That's certain. So if these little mistakes with Levine, I mean, they got to sort of come back to bite him at some point, don't you think? With his teammates?
Yeah. But, I mean, it helps that he clearly has the support of Sam Mitchell, like,
yeah,
more than maybe other young guys on the team.
It's good that Sam Mitchell notices that, too.
Yeah.
He's like a good coach.
He might need it more than other players on the team because he's getting a bunch of scrutiny from us about him playing point guard, and Mitchell's got his back and is always in his ear, and it seems to always be positive.
What do you think about Zach LaVine playing point guard, Dave?
It's... he can make it look very difficult at times, but like... it was beginning of the Atlanta game when everything was rolling. Like
he came off the bench.
That's how it was.
Ricky was playing.
Yeah, Ricky was playing, but Zach came off the bench and he had a great game.
He did.
He was slicing and dicing. He was
dibbling and dabbling.
He was a pass first point guard. He had a couple great assists. He had like a nice entry pass. I think it was Gorgie had his guy shielded off. And he had a kind of pass right over the top, and then he drove baseline and got Martin for a layup, I believe. Like, and that was one, like, Wolves Nation on Twitter was
going ham over.
Like, this is the Zach at point guard. If this is what it is, bring us this.
They were overreacting, I'm sure. You said coming in today that there was something on this stat sheet that you found interesting.
Oh, yeah, let's hear that.
So my thing on this is, so since Ricky's been out, like, people have been concentrating a lot on the plus-minus difference between Andre and Zach. And Andre, like, Zach picked up the quick falls today, and Andre had to... Andre was in the game 4 minutes into the game. I think Andre was in there, and he played well. I didn't realize it till afterwards, plus-minus tonight, Andre ended up as a minus 17, and Zach was a positive.
Holy buckets.
And, like, that's... past couple games it's kind of been flipped on that, but like,
yeah,
that was one thing that, like, I thought Andre had a heck of a game and was really good and looked down at it and saw the minus 17 and just like lied, like, visually, because he's not out there turning it over.
He's weathering the storm The Wolves went with the old guy lineup for a while tonight, with Prince and KG and Andre Miller, and I don't know if I'm concerned, but it's worth watching to see how those guys hold up. One thing I do think we saw today was Bielitsa, who has been fantastic up until tonight.
Yeah, he was pretty quiet tonight.
I think part of it was the matchup.
That Zebo-Gasol matchup, when those guys are the 4 and 5, especially Towns kind of got some early falls, and KG, he's on his minutes, not limit, but...
He comes off when he wants.
Parameters on what it's going to be for him.
Did you see he flags the bench?
He knows.
He
always talks about how he listens to his body.
It's
to the point where he knows when to come out and when he should come out.
Jermichael Green was a bad matchup for Bielitsa. A little more athletic, can handle the ball.
I think he shot the ball better than Bielitsa expected too, because he had more than one open shot on the elbow.
I wonder too if Bielitsa coming over and with the 5 games in 7 days.
That's a lot. Yeah.
With the travel, too. I mean, I don't like flying. Bielitsa is a lot taller and working out a lot more than I am, obviously, so it can't feel good.
You've got guys like him and Towns, and this is the first go-around. These are players that they are, granted, other teams have to adjust to them. It's the first time they're seeing them. But these are two guys who are getting heavy minutes that are having to deal. Like, they're on Gasol and Zebo, who've played together for 6-7 years as a tandem, and Towns and Billy are together for 10 games.
Yeah.
Trying to work into it.
To Sam Mitchell's credit, he's been doing a good job of not playing Karl-Anthony Towns a lot. This isn't like Wiggins last year, where Wiggins was getting 40 minutes. I mean, Towns is only getting 20 to 30.
He's averaging under 30 minutes a game. Did he even get 30 tonight?
He got 31.
31.
And they needed him to have those minutes.
Yeah.
But this is a marathon, not a sprint, to use the old cliche for Sam Mitchell. So for a lot of the immediate criticisms he gets for the lineup and with the Zach LaVine thing, there's definitely a long-term perspective.
Yeah, I'm fine with the way that they're using them. And despite everything that they talk about with rotations, Sam Mitchell's rotations, which is, it's like the new mid-range jumpers, I think somebody said.
Which is an issue in itself that hasn't completely gone away.
Yeah, I'm fine with the way they're doing it. I think Wiggins's minutes have gone down. Before Ricky got hurt, his minutes went down. Towns is playing under 30. I think this was KG's season high in minutes. He played like 24 minutes.
And Ricky was participating in some pregame
activities. He looks fine. I'm still not worried. With Ricky's injury, people have to remember that he's missed, what is it, 4 games now?
Yep,
4 games.
It's been like 6 days.
Yeah.
There have just been a lot of games, so I think it looks worse than it actually is. It's been less than a week.
It was an inopportune time to get injured. If this happened and there was a 2 games and 7-day stretch,
right. It wouldn't look quite as bad. And in addition, the fact that he looks good makes me think that they're just being cautious early in the season.
Just shutting him
down. Why risk a guy that has a history of injuries to miss more games when they can sit him out now and have him fully healthy for when he gets back?
That's a good point. Dave, do you see, in looking at the box scores in greater detail, I mean, tonight it's 10 players played double-digit minutes. It's been that way the entire season.
It's been that way the entire season, especially, yeah. The rookie thing gets Andre. Like, Andre, the first, when Ricky was playing, Andre
for the first
barely
5 games, I don't think.
I don't think he played at all, yeah.
Yeah, so he was, like, he's been out of necessity where all of a sudden it's game 10 of the year, and Andre's at 33 minutes tonight, I believe. And I don't think that would have ever been part of the plan heading into the year.
Well, I felt bad during the Warriors game. Go get out there, guard Steph Curry.
Oh, man. I felt bad for everyone.
Andre Miller, I didn't agree to this.
I don't want to get into recapping a game too much, but the people that were thinking, because they played the Warriors pretty well, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were within, I think, a possession pretty late in the game. I don't think Ricky Rubio would have made that big a difference. They shot over 50% or close to it in that game. And I mean, what is Ricky gonna do on Steph Curry that the other guys did? They maybe would have scored less and given the ball to Clay.
From what it looked like to me, the Warriors were like, we're just gonna score more.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
I think people look at the fact that Curry scored 45 and think, well, if Ricky was out there, he wouldn't have scored 45. It's like, okay, well, he probably would have passed the ball to someone else that would have scored.
But even that, he like Curry, it's not like those are wide open shots he's hitting. He hit that one.
Shots.
Andre Miller was out there on him on like the wing, and it looked like Andre hit the ball out of his hands as he's going up to shoot, and the ball still went in.
He did.
And there was a couple where Zach, like, people like differences on Zach on his defense.
Sure.
But Zach was in his face, arms up.
He's motivated.
And Zach's a 6'5", 6'6", long arm guy, and he's there. And Steph was hitting shots right over him. It's just Steph Curry is a top 3 player in the NBA right now.
You were around for Jordan.
I was around for Jordan.
Better than we were. I mean, Steph Curry is a phenomenon. Would you compare the...
You have to game plan for Steph the same way that you had to do for Shaq in his prime in the post.
I like that comparison.
You have to completely game plan for it. The only, I guess, and like with Jordan, like you had to game plan to stop him because Jordan was king of that mid range little fadeaway jumper, which probably analytically would be destroyed right in nowadays.
Well, the whole '90s
era.
Yeah.
But look what Steph does. Where you have to double team him if you want the ball out of his hands. But compared to like a post player, where you're double teaming down low and opening it up on the outside, and just you're hoping NBA players are going to miss threes. With Steph, you're double teaming him outside, opens it up on the inside of the court, and then it just collapses inside. And
he's such a good point guard. That's the thing that makes him ridiculous. He can pass and he can finish in the hoop and he can dribble. He's
the face of
basketball. He's not just a shooter.
Yeah. He's the face of basketball right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not close.
Like,
LeBron's
always in the case for MVP, but Steph won it last year, and, like, what he's doing. Like, he's that's a good team, and he is by far the alpha dog on that team.
Sure. And LeBron is more, he wants a title in Cleveland. Like, he doesn't need to, he had the league for a while.
Mm-hmm. But Curry, like we talk about, like, the Ricky injuries and going through that. Curry, his first couple of years in the league, was his ankles put him on the sidelines, and you never knew what you were going to get out of him, and then the ankles went out. And I think part of that, like, I saw the thing where he's like the 60th highest paid player in the NBA this year because he signed that 4-year, $44 million deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that was before, like, Curry was good, but that was before this happened, before last year happened, when he played
in a way, Curry
games and
Curry changed. And Rubio have similar contracts, I think.
I think Rubio might make a little more.
I think he has more.
But on the premise that they both haven't really been healthy or at the time, I don't think it's any question that it's his league. As far as Rubio making a difference in the game, that it's a different game. You can't just definitively say the Wolves would beat the Warriors.
Yeah,
be a different game.
My whole point was the Warriors were going to score regardless because they score regardless no matter what. Offensively, the Wolves scored, what was it? They scored over 110, I think, and they shot a stupidly high percentage. I'm not saying that the...
You're not saying...
I'm not saying that the Wolves wouldn't have played better with Ricky. All I'm saying is it's not fair to defend the loss by saying, well, if the Wolves had Rubio...
You can't say they're going to win.
The Warriors are really good, and the Wolves scored a lot, and they scored efficiently.
It was disappointing because Rubio didn't play, and it was a fun atmosphere. It was probably a sold-out, quote-unquote, crowd. Wiggins bobblehead night.
It was Thursday night, TNT.
National televised. Windhorst, Sacklow. I mean, every media pundit
Aldridge.
You could name was in town.
Mark Stein.
And plus it's the defending champs returned in there. Like,
yeah, they're pretty good.
It was everything.
It was good.
When the LeBron circus comes in, it was that. Only now it's Golden State coming in.
It was a fun atmosphere, and to hear Rubio wasn't going to play is disappointing. I think that's where the outrage comes from.
Sure.
From what I can gather, I think Wolves Twitter for the most part isn't freaking out on a game-to-game. Well, there's certainly a large amount that is, but, I mean, everybody's got the long-term plan in mind. If you're in the department of, what could we have done to get this win?
Right.
That's not how you should be looking at it. I think it's more of a long-term approach. Do you have any questions for Dave, Tim? Have we picked his brain enough?
Do you have any Alan Horton stories?
Alan Horton stories. I was up there for, like,
or any stories about your job.
It was just fun, like the Ed Molloy, and that was
you guys recreated that.
We recreated that for that's my Twitter profile pic is us recreating that moment because there's certain things that happen that when it happens live, you just go, oh, that was fun.
You're
right there laughing, like, because we knew, like, Ed Molloy, and like.
Well,
it was a big point. Like, it was a huge point of that game. Like, but that absolutely blew up. Like, the next day, like, all of a sudden,
Deadspin got it.
Deadspin got it. Like, it was all over. Yeah, Zach had it, I think, and Nick Lowe had that in his article. Like, the link.
What about you? Go back to the Spanish broadcaster days. You said you couldn't understand them, but when it's like Corey Brewer's going ham or whatever year it was, it's like, couldn't you understand? Spanish, Brewer! Like, did you ever?
Now he did, like, his call was like, Timberwolves! And I just love that. I was like, I wish Alan would do, like, the Timberwolves! It was pretty fun, like, just the way that
Alan
would just get broadcasted out there like that.
Alan with a Spanish accent would be.
That's got potential.
I mean,
that's
got potential. I just don't know if he's going to pull that off.
Any talking points you want to hit? We're at 45 minutes-ish. It's been a good day of chatter.
I think so. I'm all set.
You're good?
Unless you got anything.
I don't know. I'm the record, the 4-6, like, how would your opinion of this team change? Say the wins would have happened win, loss, 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 win. Like, and just rather than the jumping out to the 4-2 followed by 0-4, do you have any different thought on how this is going right now? Or
no, my opinion on the team has stayed pretty stable through the start of the year. I don't know. My opinions on what I expect out of the team don't change until something drastic happens. Like if someone gets hurt badly or if a trade happens. This early in the year, no major injuries. They're 4-6. Yeah. I mean, it's about where I pegged them at.
Yeah, I mean, when Flip died, everything changed.
Sure.
And I think the season started immediately after it happened. And emotionally, I'm sure more so, definitely more so for the team, you don't have a chance to really cope with it in that short amount of time. Basketball is almost like second. You know, it's taken a back seat. It's put things in perspective. And in a way, it's almost helped me see things long term. Everybody talks about Flip's vision that he had for the team. And now we're going to see it lived out, but I think everybody understands that it's a process. Mm-hmm. So because the wins aren't scattered and it's a losing streak, I think 28 wins still.
Okay.
And I'm not changing my prediction. Is that sort of a good answer to your
question?
I was
kind of in that 25 to 30 win, so your 28's right on it.
We live there.
We live there.
That's where we're
but
at.
Based on
what
your team matures and the team grows, and if they stay healthy, I'm not saying they're going to hit 45 wins, but as they figure this thing out and as Towns sees players a second time and keeps figuring out his game, and Wiggins continues to be in this attack mode that when he's in attack mode like this, and if you have those two clicking every night or 4 out of every 5 games where it's happening, this team is going to be competitive and hitting that like a 34-33 number.
I can see it.
Seems like a real like doable thing now, where before the year started, yeah, it's going to be with everything with the mixture of players, probably 25, 26, 27, 28. But now I can see into that 30s number because they're going to play hard.
And
Mitchell's
and
got playing
talent.
Hard.
They have
got
the
talent. And you're going to catch NBA teams. There's granted in the West, it's so dog eat dog, but you're going to catch teams that just maybe don't have it one night. And that's where if the kids are hungry and they're playing hard, their hunger and
dogs
like how they jumped Atlanta. Atlanta maybe thought, all right, we probably had this game, and the Wolves came out hungry, clicked, made basketball look exact beautiful. We looked like Golden State, but like
wow, bold claims,
bold
claims. Sets, Dave.
While you're throwing darts,
what's funny is to your point, Golden State came in on the tail end of a back to back.
Yes,
after a physical game
after
against Memphis. So, I mean. What we see now, though, is the Wolves aren't miserable. They're competitive in games.
Yep.
So regardless of the record, they're going to be entertaining.
Yes, entertaining. And
whether or not it's going to be translate to wins.
Look at our situation compared to like some of the other teams. Like look at those. The
even
1-9. Yeah, 1-9 teams or teams similar area.
Pelicans?
Like
the Nets.
Pelicans.
The Nets don't have a draft pick this year.
Yeah, the Nets are probably in the worst situation.
They're definitely in the worst situation.
Not
this
ever,
year.
But
this
currently.
Year. Yeah, it's not even close. I feel so bad for them. Poor Thad.
Well, Superstats Dave, you're Superstats Dave on Twitter, aren't you?
I am at Superstats Dave on Twitter.
And Tim is Tim Fakeless. You guys keep it so simple. TimFakelis.
You got it.
Follow the Hardwood Peroxides and Basketball Network. HPB Network. For the Wolves Wired podcast. So long.